Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Sunday School. We're going to go ahead and get started as you kind of filter into your seat. My name is Clay Dabbs, and we've been talking about the Peacemaker book. I would highly recommend it. You can buy it anywhere you can buy books, which is basically only Amazon. So easy to find, very well-known book, and it's about resolving conflict. And we've been talking about that for two Sundays, and we've got two more to go, including today. So we have one more after this Sunday, and then James Harper is going to talk about a book called Difficult Conversations, and that's going to finish out the summer. So today we're going to talk about gently restore. So there are four topics, and we've talked about glorify God, how conflict gives you an opportunity to glorify God in the way you handle conflict. If you wonder what's the difference between a Christian and just a nice person in Oxford, what's the difference between a member of Christ's Pres and just a well-adjusted, friendly person in town? Conflict is one of those opportunities where you can clearly show the difference. You can glorify God in that. Last week we talked about get the log out of your own eye. And we talked about me forgetting Mother's Day and not liking the way Anna reacted to me forgetting Mother's Day. So I had several people come and tell me afterwards how they had messed up Mother's Day as well. So it made me feel better. And today we're going to talk about gently restore. So for 2 weeks, we've talked about how I act and how you act. We've said that over and over. This is not about the other person. It's about how you act. And today, we're going to talk about what, we're still talking about how you act, but it's what do you do when you have been the one who's offended? You're the one who's hurt. You're the one that's offended. Do you go to that person? Do you talk to that person? If you do go to them, how do you do that? And we'll talk through that. Hopefully, this will be helpful. So, reminder, as we talked about the first Sunday, we are not Joseph. We are not sitting on our throne deciding whether we should be gracious to people. We are actually one of the brothers. We have committed an incredible, beyond comprehension offense. We have been forgiven of that offense in a way that makes absolutely no sense. We have been given an unbelievable amount of grace. We walk away from that, and then we get in a conflict with each other. And it's how do we react with each other? Do we resolve conflict in a way that we remember how much we've been forgiven? So let me pray for us, and we'll get started. Father in heaven, we thank you for this beautiful day. I thank you for another Sunday. We thank you for your word and how it is also described in the wisdom of this Peacemaker book. I pray you'd help us to know how to handle conflict in our lives and how to try to gently restore when we have been offended. And I pray that you would just fill us all with your grace and that in whatever we do, that it would be that grace that spills out on other people. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, so Galatians 6:1 says, "Brothers, if someone is caught in a sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently." So that's where the term gently restore comes from. And so the first principle of this is you keep it between just you and the person that has offended you. So just between the two of you. Well-known verse, Matthew 18. You hear about the Matthew 18 process. You hear about Matthew 18 resolution, that kind of thing. And that's what we're going to talk about a little bit today. So Matthew 18 says, "If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. If he listens to you, you have won him over." So this is more than, this is a gently restore. That's much more than just a confrontation. Gently restore means more than just confront. Does anybody know what the context of this verse is? What comes right before Matthew 18:15? Anybody know? offering a sacrifice. It's actually not correct, but thank you for answering. It's like, I'm so glad somebody will talk, but I'm sorry, that's actually not the right answer. So it's actually the parable of the lost sheep. So if you think about, when we think about Matthew 18, we think about confronting someone who's done something wrong, right? But if you think that it comes right after the parable of, I'll leave the 99 to go and rescue the one, and when I find the one, I will rejoice over that, and that I found the one lost sheep. That kind of changes how you view what this actually means. So it's much more than confront. And let me just say, this section of the book talks a lot about confronting someone who's just in sin. So you may have a situation where you just have someone you know who's living in a sin that needs to be confronted, but they haven't actually done anything to you. Does that make sense? Like you're confronting them about something in their life. That's totally a good thing and something that we ought to talk about. It's really not something we're going to talk about today. So what I want to talk about today is focus on what happens when you're the one that's offended. So this person has done something to you, and now you are going to that person to try to resolve that. But certainly Matthew 18 applies to the situation where you have a friend that's caught in something that needs to be dealt with, and you go and deal with it. But it's actually not directly to you. So hit the next slide for me there, Anna. Thank you. Okay, so more than a confrontation, sooner or later you're going to have this face-to-face. It's basically impossible to do this electronically. We do all sorts of stuff electronically. I definitely like to text, you know. I don't know about you, but when my phone rings, half the time I just go, really? You know, not when Anna calls me, but it's like, I would probably prefer text. But when you have this kind of situation, trying to resolve conflict, you're not really going to do that by text. You ever gotten the little blue dot, you know, the little dot, 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 and then all of a sudden, like, your whole screen fills up with a message, and you're like, whoa. That's not a great way to resolve conflict. It's also hard to end text message conversations or electronic conversations, right? The best invention ever is the little like feature, because it's kind of, okay, I've read your message, good message, we're done. But it's very hard to end. And if you're in a serious conversation electronically, lots of times, if not most of the time, you just need to call the person and talk to them. Because you can't hear, you know, there's so much you miss electronically. So anyway, sooner or later you need to have this conversation face to face. It's actually okay. We think of this, it has to be direct. It has to be like me and you. You know, there's a lot of wisdom in indirectly. If you need to start the conversation with somebody else, reaching out to that person, maybe they know them better, it's okay to have an indirect conversation. An example of this would be Jacob kind of sending people ahead of him when he met Esau, and he was worried Esau was going to want to kill him. You know, it's okay to start it off indirect in some situations. And when we say it's more than a confrontation, it's not just about venting, right? This is not an argument or a fight. It's not about, I need you to know that you hurt me and you can't do that anymore, right? That is not gently restoring. That's just yelling, right? So when you do this, you have to get the log out of your own eye. Whatever the situation, as we talked about last week, even as bad as it seems, there's always something for you to think about in how you've acted, right? So how can you get the log out of your own eye before you have this conversation? And you want to speak the truth in love, which is, I think, the next slide. So speak the truth in love. The priority here is the relationship with the person. So when you speak the truth in love, the priority is the relationship. It is not the getting retribution for the wrong that's been committed against you. It's about restoring the relationship. It's not about getting your punch in to hit back. Restoring the relationship. And if you think about that, if the priority in this is to restore the relationship, it changes how you interact with that person. Be quick to listen. So what does it mean to listen? I'm just going to kind of fly through some of these because I want to talk about some scenarios. But to be quick to listen means waiting. That just means you're letting the other person talk. That sounds simple. It's very hard to do, and there are very few people that are good at it, right? It is hard to do that, to just sit and listen, because your mind is going 100 miles an hour, and you're thinking about your response. What I'm terrible about, if I'm actually listening, is that I'm just dissecting my response the whole time. I'm like dissecting their, I'm listening, okay, that's their argument. Well, here's my response, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, here's why you're wrong and I'm right. Attending just means you're actually listening to what they're saying. You know, right now I know many of you, it's hard not to think about something else because I'm usually sitting where you're sitting and I have a hard time not thinking about something else because your brain goes so much faster than the person. You can think a lot faster than you can talk. Well, you're thinking a lot faster than the person up here is talking. And it's, I do this on a regular basis. We'll finish an interaction, either me with Anna or me with somebody else, and Anna will be like, you could tell that you weren't listening to anything they were saying because I'm just kind of glassy-eyed and thinking about something else. So it's something you do on purpose. You think about what they're saying. You clarify. Clarify shows that you're listening. You repeat what they said. Okay, so you said this. Now let me understand what you're saying. If I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying ABC, right? You repeat what they've said to you, and that shows them that you've actually listened. Same with reflecting, okay? Clarifying, reflecting. Can you give me an example of what you're saying? So you're saying that I'm inconsiderate. Can you give me an example of that? Or, you know, if you're the one that's been offended and you go to them and then they come back at you, which happens basically every time, with something that you've done, right? Can you give me an example of that? You're going back and forth to make sure you're listening. And then if there are things you can agree on, you agree. So, okay, you're right when you say, I've done this, you're actually right about that. And that goes a long way. So, waiting, attending, clarifying, reflecting, agreeing. Principles of listening. And then the tongue of the wise brings healing. A bunch of just principles when you're having these conversations, these attempting to gently restore a relationship. You want to breathe grace. So you can't breathe grace out if you haven't breathed it in. So the first thing is, have you actually considered God's grace to you? And is that what's coming out? Make charitable judgments. This is something that I say all the time, especially when folks first get married. This is my opinion. You can agree or disagree. Don't assume malice in things that people do, right? The things that we say, the mean things that we say, we usually say them on purpose. And a lot of times, the nice things that we say, we're trying to get a little, you know, thank you for doing that, but, you know, I did need it yesterday, but thank you for doing it, you know. You got to get your little dig in. But the things that we do, okay, the day-to-day offenses, most of the time, we don't do them on purpose. We're being selfish and oblivious, right? It's not like, you know, I'm going to leave my shoes in the middle of the den for a week just to get back at Anna. No, I'm just being oblivious and dumb and selfish, right? I'm just not thinking about the shoes. So if Anna says, hey, would you please pick up your shoes? She knows that I'm not trying to get her by leaving the shoes in the den. So that's a silly example, but the reality is that's true a lot of the time, and hopefully we'll show that in some scenarios we're going to talk about. So speak the truth in love, even with your being blunt. You're speaking from a point of love. Again, the priority is not getting your way or winning. The priority is restoring the relationship. Talk from beside and not above. Help others examine the desires of their hearts. Choose the right time and place. That's really important. You know, if somebody's walking out the door, that's not when you start like a heated conversation. You want to make sure there's a time and a place to do that. Talk in person, like we said, whenever possible. It's like I said, it's just hard to have a serious conversation if it's not in person. Engage rather than declare. That goes back to what I was saying before. It's not your opportunity to say, I just need to tell you what you did and how that hurt me, and you just need to know, you can't ever do that again. That's declaring, right? And engage is like, how can we restore this relationship? Plan your words. Communicate so clearly that you cannot be understood. That's really important. Misunderstandings are the root of many, many, many problems in all areas of life. So be very clear about what you're saying. Plan your words. This is a really big one. A lot of times we think that if we plan our words, we're not being sincere. Does that make sense? Like, for example, I'll give an example. When you come up here and pray, is it okay to plan the prayer, or does it need to be like genuine and spontaneous? Like, it's okay to plan. Things go better when you plan, right? Important things that you do, you plan for, right? So planning your words in a difficult conversation is a great idea. Write it down if you need to. You know, write it out. Anybody watch Stranger Things? Okay. You know, she wrote out the cop was going to have a big conversation with his daughter, and she like wrote it out. This is what you're supposed to say. He didn't say any of that, but she wrote it out for him. Use I statements, and that means that's the emphasis on you and not the other person. You're focused on what, you know, I was hurt when you said this. Be objective. That's one of those. It's like, well, that's nice. Just be objective. That's very hard to do. Very few people are objective about anything, but try to be objective. Try to see the other side of the issue. Use the Bible carefully. The Bible is not a weapon for you to throw out. You know, the Bible says, wives submit to their husbands. You know, that is not a good idea. So don't do that. Ask for solutions and offer solutions. Again, if the priority is the relationship, then the priority is solving the conflict as opposed to just lobbing your side back at the other person. You're looking for solutions, you know. Okay, what's the solution to that? Let the other person talk about solutions they might have. And then recognize your limits. You know, it's ultimately God is who changes people's hearts, and you just have to recognize, sometimes you just have to recognize the limits and what you can do. Okay, and then if you are going through that process and you're thinking about those things and it still doesn't get you anywhere, at this point you start bringing another person along. Same part of Matthew 18, but if he will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or more witnesses. And then you have what's kind of known as the Matthew 18 process. So the principle here is, you want to keep the circle as small as possible for as long as possible. So when you have a conflict, you want to keep the group of people that's involved in this as small as you can for as long as you can. The more difficult the conflict, the more likely you're going to have more people involved and bring more people along. So the Matthew 18 process starts with overlook minor offenses, which I think is the next slide there. We've talked about that many times. Overlook minor offenses resolves a lot of this. You know, that doesn't mean it's easy. It doesn't mean that the hurt goes away. It just means that you absorb the pain of that interaction. Because a lot of times, you know, you could make it worse. And overlooking it is the best way to go. Then you talk in private, which is kind of what we've just talked about for a few minutes. Again, if you're still just entrenched in this conflict, you come to a trusted friend. You go to a counselor, you go to someone in your church, and you ask for help, and you come back with a group of, with now it's more than you, and you're talking about this. This person is helping you with this. You're still stuck. You kind of tell it to the church. This is where, like, the formal church discipline process starts, and the leadership of the church get involved, and ultimately could have consequences of the person being treated as a non-believer. And that's kind of the Matthew 18 process. So I flew through a lot of those because I wanted to talk about some scenarios and see what y'all thought about these scenarios. So when I do training at work, sometimes they give little clickers, like a game show, and everybody answers questions, and then they show you the answers, and you realize you're one of the 5%, you know, that got the answer wrong. So I'm going to ask y'all to just raise your hands if you're willing, and we'll try to participate that way, see what y'all think about some of these scenarios. So I've got three scenarios I'm trying to get to. The first one is totally personal. Like, there's no money involved. It's just feelings, right? The vast majority of our day-to-day issues are just about our feelings, right? Our feelings have been hurt. So the first example actually happened. The other two are totally made up. So any resemblance to real life is purely coincidental. You know, I'm not talking about anybody in here, you know. But the first one actually happened to Anna. So she gave me permission to tell this story. So many years ago, before Clayton was born, this involves people that have actually never been to Christ for us, even as a visitor. They don't live in Oxford, so don't try to figure out who, you know. I'm not talking about anybody that you know. So when we were first married, I started really having convictions about birth control, about using birth control. Don't want to get off on that, although interesting topic to talk about. Presbyterians are kind of like God's sovereign over everything but childbirth, but I'll just leave it at that. So y'all can all get mad at me. So anyway, Ann and I were having this back and forth, and we've used birth control various ways. So I'm totally hypocritical here. But anyway, when we're first married, we decided to stop using birth control, which resulted in Clayton. So that's a great thing, right? And Anna had a conversation with a friend where they talked about this and, you know, kind of said it in confidence. And then she talked to another person. So person A is a friend of Anna's. Person B is also a friend of Anna's. Person B is a casual friend with person A. And person B says, "I heard that Clay is so religious he won't let you use birth control." So, ouch, right? It's actually a huge compliment to me, right? It really is. People think you're like that, so you're doing something right. But that really stung Anna, right? She said that to that person. She didn't, and obviously she's like talking about us. We hate that, right? We hate it when people talk about us. So how many of you think Anna should ignore that and just move on? Anybody think you should just ignore it? Okay, a couple ignores. How many of you think she should talk to the person and do a gently restore? We're in gently restore territory. Okay. Say who? The third party is not really even at fault here. It's the first person she talked in confidence to. Gently restore. Okay. I think you're right about that. In this case, this was not someone that Anna saw often. The relationship was kind of changing. Anna chose to just overlook this and kind of move on. But if this was somebody that was like a close friend that she saw a couple times a week, you know, she would have had to have dealt with this, right? Otherwise, it's just going to totally mess up your relationship. So that's a situation where she would go and talk to that person. That's the hard thing to do, to gently restore. Okay, the easy thing to do is just immediately start talking about them. That's the default position of human beings. You know, there's not like an evil Sunday school where they have to teach you. Now, I want you to get really angry and say something really ugly about the person that talked about you. That's what I want you to do. No, we know how to do that really at birth. We're really, really good at it. So you have to really consciously push against that. Like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to talk back about that person. I'm going to go to that person and talk to them about this. So so that's a situation where you would want to go to the person. And again, you go back to this. The priority is relationship. If you want to restore that relationship, you're going to have to go talk to them. Otherwise, it's just going to affect you. Okay, so the next one. This one's totally made up again. Totally made up. Husband and wife are trying to decide whether to buy a couch. Wife wants to buy a couch. They have several conversations about it. Let's assume that these are basically civil conversations, and they decide they're not going to buy the couch, right? Husband decides mainly they're not going to buy the couch. Now, you know how this goes. This is over with. Husband is thinking, we both decided we didn't need a couch, right? Wife is thinking this is a major loss. You know, dadgummit, I wanted to buy the couch. Right. So, believe me, I don't let the husband off the hook here. Husbands do not get a pass in Clay Sunday School. That's kind of a rule. So, does anybody think that the husband has committed offense against wife here at this point? Right. Not really. Let's assume they probably shouldn't buy the couch, right? Not really. You've kind of come to a decision. The decision is not what one person wanted to do. They haven't really committed offense. I mean, if you go back to the husband, really you're just having the same conversation again, you know. Now, maybe you need to have a conversation about how you handle money, which is what we're going to talk about in a second. So probably not. Okay. A couple weeks go by, and husband comes home on a Saturday. He's really excited. He's got a new shotgun. I heard a gasp. Right? Kind of the same price as the couch, right? This kind of stuff happens all the time, right? Okay, has the husband committed an offense now against the wife? Yes. Okay, yes, right. How many of you think the husband, the wife, so the wife is now in, she has now the one that's been offended, right? Should she overlook this offense and just let it go? Anybody think that? No? This is one where I would say you shouldn't overlook it, right? Because you need to deal with this, because this is probably a pattern. And if this goes on for years and years and years, it's going to create all this resentment, right? It's going to blow up into something even worse. So this is a situation where it should be dealt with. Should she immediately call, you know, call the session, get him over here. He bought a shotgun, right? No, this is, you know, you're going to go to him first and just discuss between the two of you. Now, how's that going to go? So, obviously, okay, let me go back to the make charitable judgments. To me, this is a great example of the husband did not say, you know what, I'm going to stick it to my wife. I'm going to buy a shotgun. No, he's being selfish and oblivious and being dumb, right? He's being a blockhead. That doesn't mean he hasn't hurt you, right? He has actually hurt you, but he did not do it to hurt you. He did it because he wanted a shotgun, and he's already forgotten about the couch, right? You come to him and say, what is going on with the shotgun? He's going to say, but we've already decided not to buy the couch. I thought we both decided, right? Then he's going to say, well, what about the vacation last year that you wanted to do? We did that. And you're going to say, well, why are we talking about the vacation? What does this have to do with anything, right? Now you're just mad at each other, okay? And so maybe you need to talk about how the husband feels trapped and he can't ever spend any money, right? Maybe you need to talk about how, you know, you got to make clear that you did hurt, that hurt me when you said we can't buy the couch and then you went and bought the shotgun, regardless of how good a sale it was, you know? So you want to go into that, and the priority is not to get your couch. The priority is to restore the relationship, okay? And if you're the husband in that situation, you need to take it seriously what's happened there. You need to be, you know, when you find out that someone has something against you, what did Jesus say? Leave the altar and go and resolve that. So you need to have the attitude of, okay, I have done something here. How can I resolve that? And obviously, none of this is easy. You know, if the husband cusses you out and leaves and comes back at 3 o'clock in the morning, if that happens all the time, then you need to talk to somebody else, and you've got a very serious problem there. You don't need to take that lightly. What if, you know, what if, what would a friend tell you to do? The friend would tell you to get out your peacemaker nuclear missile and buy the couch, right? That would be kind of the worldly response. Is that going to make things better? Take the gun back, for sure. That's on the table for sure, and that's probably what needs to happen. Yeah. Getting to that could be very difficult. I'm not pretending that any of this is easy. So, depending on the reaction of the husband, you may need to get somebody else involved. Because it may be opening up. It's really not about the shotgun. It's not about the couch. It's revealing other things that need to be dealt with. So what if, go back to the couch scenario. You decide not to buy the couch. 2 weeks go by, furniture store shows up with the couch. And you're like, I thought we decided not to buy the couch. You know, I talked to my dad, and he said early birthday, and he bought it. Now, I'm going to confess something to you about myself. This is my reaction to that. Freak out, right? I'm very practical about that kind of thing. My father-in-law would confirm that that's my attitude. Okay, so how many of you think that an offense has been committed now against the husband? She didn't talk to him about it at all, right? So that's something you need to deal with. Like, a lot of times those gifts have strings attached, and that's really the problem, right? You're going to dad or you're going to somebody else every time you don't get your way to get whatever you want. And that can be a huge problem. So you're going to go to the wife and you're going to have that conversation of, look, I know she's going to be like, but we got the couch. We didn't have to spend any money. What's the big deal? You know, and you got to have this conversation about, you know, we're our own family and we made decisions, and that undermines me completely and makes me feel like, you know, a worthless husband, you know. So anyway, just some things to think about. Any thoughts about that scenario before we go to the next one? About how you might try to resolve that? Take the shotgun back is probably the best thing to do. I mean, if you're the husband and you take the shotgun back, that's going to help, right? That's going to help a lot more than the shotgun's going to help you. You may find yourself not hunting much if you keep the shotgun. Okay, so my last scenario is this. We're doing good. Okay, we're doing good on time. So this is something I hear more and more. It's probably maybe because I get older. It's arguments over inheritances. So let's assume this. You get three siblings, okay? One sibling is much more successful than the other two. The other two are fine. They're surviving, but they've never really gotten ahead financially, right? They're kind of always kind of stuck in the mud. And then one of them has been highly successful, makes plenty of money. So the final living parent passes away, and let's just say they have $300,000. So they have a lot of money, but not, you know, we're not all retiring and moving to Hawaii at age 50 with $300,000, right? The parents are very clear. The will, there's no confusion. Everybody gets 100, the three siblings. That's obvious. That's clearly what the parents wanted. And let's assume in this case that you're the wealthier sibling. Your other two siblings come to you and they say, you know, we've been talking. And we've decided that probably you should just split it between us. And we should both get 150 because, I mean, come on. You've got a lot more money than us. Now, let's stop right there. How many of you think they've committed an offense against you when that happens? Okay, some of you. They've committed an offense. Now, I think you're probably right. I think you're right. My advice to you in that situation, assuming that you don't need it, would be just give them the money. Just give it to them, right? You're like, but they're taking advantage of me. That's not what the parents wanted. You're totally right about that. You are totally right. And just give them the money, right? If the priority is the relationship, just give them the money. What if they take the money and then they blow it all? Which, that's what would happen. Now, I mean, you're super frustrated now, right? And you're going to go to them and talk to them. But again, you've got to consider kind of where you are in this scenario versus where they are. Get the log out of your own eye. Consider, you know, how many good things that happened to you to get to you where you are and where they are. What if you had loaned them money, you know, over the last, say, decade, and they actually owed you money, and now they're saying that they should get all the inheritance? That's the kind of thing that happens, right? If you're the lesser successful person and you think it makes total sense for you to get more money because your brother or sister is so loaded, you got to remember, it's not your money. It's your parents' money. And it's not up to you. You know, your parents decided what to do with it. And it was their decision to make and not yours. And even though it seems like, maybe it seems like it's not fair, and maybe it's not fair, but it wasn't your choice to make. And actually, the correct thing to do is to let the more successful sibling have the money Because maybe he wants to give it, or she wants to give it to their kids or do something, you know, that's especially from the parents. So you just have to, you have to try to just think about the needs of the other person in that scenario. So thankfully, my two brothers are, my parents are still alive. I have two brothers. I'm certainly not the rich brother in that scenario, that's for sure. But you know, I'm the, I guess if you want to say, financial person of the two, of the three brothers. And so it's going to be my job to sort all that out when that happens. And I can tell you that I have a great relationship with both my brothers. I text with them every day about all sorts of stuff. And the number one priority for me is when that's over with, I want to have a great relationship with them. I really, it's not that I don't care about money or those things. That's awesome. But the most important thing to me is it would just be a tragedy if that messed up my relationship with my brothers. Over something like that. So I know that can be really hard when you're in it, and money can just make people do insane things, but just try to think about the other person. So those are my three scenarios. Any comments about that scenario? Any thoughts about that? Kind of wrap it up here. So this is the way I'd wrap all of this up. For some reason, I keep talking about rich people. I'm sorry. Imagine a rich person has a car wreck, okay? They're not physically hurt, and nobody else is hurt, but it messes up their car bad. You know, they hit a tree, and it messes up the front of their car. So this is inconvenient. It's a problem. It's a pain. But the reality is it's really not that big a deal because they probably have another car to drive. They have great insurance. That maybe they just wanted to buy a new car anyway, right? It's not a big deal. Now imagine you're two months behind on your payments. You just got a new job. It's your third day. You're late, and you hit a tree, and you can't afford real insurance, so insurance is not going to pay for your car, and you have no idea what you're going to do. The exact same thing happens to two different people. For one, it's catastrophic. It's like life-changing catastrophic. For another, it's no big deal, purely because of the abundance or lack of abundance that they have. Now, this is my question. When you are offended, okay, when you're the one that's been hurt and you're going to gently restore a person, are you going to them as someone who is spiritually wealthy, who is living in an abundance of grace, an abundance of love, an abundance of peace? Or are you going to them as somebody who's on the razor's edge and it's just a catastrophe and everything's terrible and it just sets you off? And that's something we need to ask ourselves, because if you put your faith and your hope in Jesus, what the Bible says is you will never be put to shame. You will never be put to shame. And there's an unending source of joy and love and peace and grace. And if you put your faith in Jesus, when you get hurt, you don't have to react like you have no reserves or no resources. It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. It doesn't mean it's not a big deal. It doesn't mean that you just blow things off and just say, nothing bothers me, because that's not true. Everything bothers us. But you don't have to engage as if, you know, you've just been destroyed by this, because you know ultimately you put your faith in Jesus, you have the love of the Father, the God of the universe, and you will never be put to shame, whatever happens in your life. And if we think about that and we think the priority is the relationship, you know, the priority for Joseph with his brothers was not getting back at his brothers, because believe me, he could have. He could have snapped his fingers and had them all beheaded in an hour. His priority was restoring his relationship with his brothers, with his dad, with his family, helping his family. What's Jesus' priority? It's to restore the relationship with human beings, to restore the relationship with you. It's not to get back, you know. And that's so hard to do. It's easy to stand up here and say this. I'm not the one that is, whatever situation you're in, you know, it's easy for me to say, because I'm not the one that's been hurt. But if we would think about that and ponder those things and pray about those things, you know, it'd change the way we handle conflict. So that's what I'll leave you with. And we got one more week. Next week we'll talk about go and be reconciled. So thank you, guys.